Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. Happy to report that in this daily editorial, Shad and I are chatting with Axel Merk, Chief Investment Officer at Merk Investments. You can also follow Axel on Twitter at Axel Merk. I'll post a link to his Twitter account. Now, Axel, let's start off with a step back from the markets here. We are seeing some weakness to kick off this week, and it's looking like the third week in a row of the markets drifting lower. And even the way the market started off on Monday, it's a bit more than a drift lower right now. The topic that we're going to start on here is liquidity for the markets. The argument being that there has been a lot of liquidity for these markets as they were pretty boring, just consistently drifting higher. That story might be changing, but again, there's so many moving parts within that whole general liquidity discussion. What's catching your eye here, Axel? Should people actually be concerned about liquidity drying up for U.S. markets?
Yeah, great to be with you. Well, liquidity is a broad topic. The traditional way we think about it, and let me just comment on that first, is that obviously as we have kind of juiced up these markets with easy money, people have been deploying that cash, people have been using leverage to do that. And so when there's a risk-off environment, for whatever reason, obviously things can go in reverse. The other way that I like to think about liquidity, because you talked about what I'm concerned about, is that I believe in general, liquidity is skin deep. And what I mean with that is, it used to be, remember the bad banks that were gambling with their money? Well, Dodd-Frank has prevented that. So they used to be providing liquidity when the going went rough. Well, they're not allowed to do that anymore. So the main quote-unquote liquidity providers are these algorithmic traders. And they have no obligations to anybody. And so if there is some sort of dislocation in the market, they just take a step back and say, well, let's see how this all unfolds. And so when you have both some of the big boys not participating and then some of these very aggressive folks saying, hey, we don't need to do this, well, suddenly the liquidity can evaporate. And so that doesn't happen just because markets go down and down and down, but it comes because of these unknown unknowns. When something disrupts the markets, they just say, okay, let's take a step back, right? And so it's that sort of lack of liquidity that I'm concerned about. As we're talking, we haven't seen that. Obviously, some of what's been happening on Monday is ripple effects coming out of China with concerns about contagion. And you never know how that sort of thing unfolds. And so we'll just have to see what happens, or we don't have to see it. You can take precautions against it, but for the time being, I'm watching mostly what's happening there.
Well, Axel, another thing that's been a phenomenon over the last year or so has been the emergence of so many retail traders coming into the market, and you've seen record amounts of trading platforms open, people stuck at home, getting government checks and plowing them into the markets, but none of them have really experienced a significant correction yet. In fact, a lot of them are new investors. Do you think that there could be a day of reckoning if the markets continue to roll over here and all of that liquidity that came in over the last year or so just from the hordes of retail investors could also go running for the exit doors?
Of course, except I would caution that it's very difficult to time that. Remember the irrational exuberance speech? I think it was late 96 that Greenspan uttered that, and the markets went up to 2000. Indeed, we have kind of tried to look at past market peaks, and this irrational exuberance can last for many, many years. Now, some people would argue, hey, this bull market has lasted for a very long time. But it is very, very difficult to time that. But absolutely, these new folks, the meme folks, people chasing some digital assets, there will be a rude awakening at some point. But it's very difficult to say from what level, right? I mean, there can be a major correction from here. It can be from significantly high up. And so it's very, very difficult to encourage people saying, hey, the time to be cautious is now. What I try to tell people is, hey, you have an investment process, you allocate certain money to the riskier portion of your portfolio, and as that moves higher, well, over time, we used to say rebalance, right? Take some chips off the table so that if you think that overall the markets are okay, that you don't miss out on the rally. But of course, yeah, if you can afford to hunker down, well, by all means, be my guest.
Axel, how concerned are you personally about what's going on in China with the Evergrande situation? Is that something that investors need to be aware of that you think could impact U.S. markets and just broadly financial markets?
Yes. Well, the challenge with these contagions is that you never quite know how they unfold. Historically, China has been very tight, let nobody ever fail. And so they think they can control it. But if I understand it correctly, they owe, some reports say $250 billion, some say $300 billion, to over 150 banks. I've read 170 banks or more. And so if they default, then suddenly the Chinese government will have to kind of patch up all the other banks. Now, they can presumably ease some requirements and so forth that you don't have a collapse there. But remember in 2008, the head of Citi said, hey, he'll dance until the music stops. You never quite know when the music does stop. And so it's one of these areas where you might want to be concerned about. Now, that said, as we are talking, China has a holiday on Monday. China has a holiday on Tuesday. And so we have very little guidance what comes out from there and what sort of bazooka they'll pull. At the same time, if we look at the U.S. and other countries, we are, of course, awake, and our central bankers are awake, and so their bazookas are ready to promise everybody that nothing is going to happen. But it just shows, I mean, the context is, of course, that China decided that finally some banks, some institutions are allowed to fail, which is, of course, a very healthy development. But it shows that the further we push these things, and we, of course, do it with QE and all kinds of other things in the U.S. as well, the more likely it is we get some sort of taper tantrum, to use that word, as we're trying to get to a quote-unquote normal environment.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of focus on the banks this week with over a dozen central banks meeting and looking at monetary policy. We've got the Fed this week, later in the week. Do you think at all that the Fed is looking at other banks starting to hike early and considering that for themselves, or are they just marching to the beat of their own drum and looking at U.S. data as we move into the Fed meeting this week?
They mostly march to their own drum. You're quite right. Other central banks, New Zealand maybe being the foremost of them, are expected to hike. So have several hikes in the next 12 months. And Norway is one of them. So there's going to be greater divergence. But overall, the one thing they're concerned about is that taper tantrum, not just U.S. markets, where there's going to have ripple effects. That's why they've been so extremely slow in saying, oh, yes, maybe we'll taper, we'll do it at some point. And so that's, of course, well priced into the market in some ways. The context, though, is, as I just indicated, right, we have holidays in the U.S. The Fed is meeting on Tuesday while China is still closed. And so if these concerns about Chinese markets are expanding, there is a lack of communication there. And so that all of that might give the Fed a more dovish tilt than otherwise. And I realize that may not be very easy to do. At the other end of the spectrum, of course, there are a few at the Fed that say this QE is completely useless right now. And so we might start seeing some dissents at the Fed. And of course, Powell won't be happy about that either. So they got themselves in the corner, and we may well find out about how cornered they are at some point.
So Axel, when it comes to all the different mentalities or even policies of these central banks carrying over to the currency markets, the US dollar has actually been kind of boring recently, trading in a fairly tight range. There are still a lot of dollar bears out there. I think they outnumber the dollar bulls. Where do you stand on the dollar and where it could trade, say, after all these central bank meetings, maybe through the end of the year?
Well, in the medium to long term, I believe that we are in a global reflationary environment, and quite often when you have a major shift, you move from a secular dollar bear market to a bull market. And so March last year, at the peak of the pandemic fallout, I think we had that sort of secular shift, and that's why we have seen the dollar range bound, because on the one hand we are reflating the world, but then at the other end, what's counting against that is the risk off environment we've had of late. And so the dollar is weakening on a longer term basis, but of course when you have this reflation, it's the emerging markets, those are borrowing in dollars, that's a short on the dollar, but whenever you have risk off, it provides this counter wave. And so that's why it's not too surprising you have a bit of a range bound here, and at the same time in the medium term I do expect the dollar to weaken as this plays out.
Well, just pivoting over to the precious metals, in this kind of environment where you have negative real rates, you have inflation higher. I know the jury is still out as to whether it's transitory or not, but regardless, the metrics are higher when you look at the CPI, and you look at all the spending going on from fiscal spending and the monetary policy of the banks. One would think the precious metals would be higher bid during this time period, but that hasn't happened. So what do you make of the reaction by gold and the precious metals, silver, in this kind of an environment?
Many topics you mentioned. Let me just touch on each one of them very briefly. First of all, ultimately, I think fiscal policy is most relevant for the inflation dynamics. Second, when you try to open the economy on one end and hold it back on the other end with COVID restrictions in some Asian countries and other places, you are generating inflation. And with variants and other things, those sort of dynamics will go further. I'm personally most concerned, though, about what's happening at the tail end of things, if indeed the Fed does go through going for maximum employment and full throttle. To me, that's just completely irresponsible. Now, to answer your question, though, we have seen gold be quite correlated over time with real interest rates, and not short-term ones, but kind of medium ones, such as the 10-year rate. And so right now, as we're talking, the 10-year rate is at 130, but the real rates, if you deduct inflation expectations based on the TIPS yield, you get to a real yield of minus 1%. And so as that real yield has been shifting, gold has been shifting. Now, obviously, that's not a perfect correlation. In recent weeks, there's been some disconnect to it. But to me, if you ask me about my outlook on gold, it's really a question, where are those real interest rates are going to go? And my view on that is that as this economy is improving, interest rates are going to be kept very low, and yet the inflation dynamic is going to continue to play out. And so I expect the real interest rates to continue to be quite negative and possibly become more negative. And so it's in that sort of environment that I like gold and continue to obviously invest heavily in gold. And as you're aware, we manage about $1 billion in gold and gold mining companies. So we obviously have a cat in that game.
So Axel, are we finally going to see maybe a more tradable bottom in gold or even the gold miners? Because we've gone through now over a year correction and the gold miners continue to underperform to the downside. Is this going to change soon, or is this just going to last through the rest of this year? And time is what those investors need.
Well, those gold miners have been very profitable. They've had their act together, except they have underinvested, especially the large ones. And so at some point, they have to start acquiring some of the junior players, and they're doing a little bit of that. They've been quite disciplined. I don't think we are at the end of this bull market until that discipline is completely gone, and that may be years away. And there have been some opportunities in the more junior ones. They're obviously highly speculative. The junior ones, though, are much more dependent on how the credit markets are doing. And so if you have a day like today when we're talking, when risk is off, then these junior companies don't do so well. So investing in miners has always been notoriously volatile. But part of the reason why the major companies have been lagging is because they're so profitable. And that means they have more cash, and that means they have less of a leverage to the gold price of gold than they've had before. So it's a bit of a quirky dynamics that there is. But in the medium term, I do think that if people don't think the price of gold is volatile enough, that there are plenty of opportunities in some gold miners.
Well, Axel, we've heard from a couple different folks we've brought on the show that they think the lack of interest in the gold miners from the generalist community is because there's so much action in the main markets. But now with the main markets rolling over, their premise was if there was a correction in the markets, that would then bring people over to the safe haven of gold, and eventually they would find the mining stocks. Do you think that it's required to have some kind of a market crash for the generalists to get interested in this sector?
Well, interests are shifting, correlations are shifting. To maybe take a step back, the price of gold in the medium term has just about a zero correlation to the S&P 500. But of late, the correlation actually has been positive. And so why bother going towards gold when the S&P does everything you want to and whatnot, right? So in that sense, yes, you want the rest of the market to be more in turmoil for people to look further. That said, there is, I like the gold miners for their own sake. I mean, ultimately, investors always need to be aware of what sort of risk they want to take on and which ones they want to avoid. And so I know many people that, oh, I don't like the S&P 500, so I put my money into gold miners. Well, I like gold miners, but don't kid yourself. Those are very volatile securities, and you use the word eventually. Yes, I mean, but you gotta have the sort of horizon to stomach the volatility that is coming along the way. And basically, one of the things is, of course, the when you have the price of gold at 1700 or 1800, most of these gold miners, they price in 1300 to break even. And so as long as they're prudent with their budgeting, yes, the price will be volatile, but those sort of companies will be doing just fine.
Do you think the majors have been prudent enough right now? They definitely have focused more on these higher margin deposits, but again, that whole argument of why they aren't taking over juniors, but these companies also do have a portfolio of these assets that they've written down practically to zero. So they could always bring them back on in a rising gold price environment. How do you balance that argument?
Well, I mean, the short of it is that mine lives are finite. And so they have to replenish their reserves. And historically, they used to do it by spending a lot of money on exploration. They haven't done that much as they've repaired their balance sheets. And so they are pretty much using those junior folks as a way to try to kind of pick and choose then where they want to acquire things. And I wouldn't be surprised if the bigger ones are looking for downturns in the markets to then strike out and acquire somebody. But of course, the small ones also, the seller needs to be willing to sell as well. So it's going to be interesting to watch. I mean, the longer this drags on, the more the pressure will build on the majors to buy something, and obviously they owe it to their shareholders, of course, not to overpay, and so they're being patient. And for the time being, that game continues.
So, Axel, final point then. I understand you are generally bullish gold, right? But how concerned are you? What are the odds that this market could roll over and we could be in another bear market similar to what happened in 2012?
What's different is that the fiscal policy is far more effective than it was. Back in 2012, the fiscal policy was really a fiscal drag. Now, compared to what we had last year, obviously we have a bit of a fiscal drag. Consumers also overspent, so there's going to be a little bit. And yes, we'll have the tapering. I like to remind people that after 2012, we had many years without any interest rate hikes. And so I don't expect that to come this way around either, but I do expect the inflation dynamics to be very different this time around, as we see it, right? I mean, when you throttle production and consumers have money, you're going to get inflation. When you have people get out of the workforce because they have made too much money or a lot of money in the stock market, you're going to have more wage pressures. When you have a fiscal authority that wants to do infrastructure spending and is going to get a boatload of money out of the door, you're going to have more inflationary spending. When you have a debt to GDP level that's going through the roof and have no entitlement reform, you have a major incentive to debase the value of the currency. Do I know what the price of gold is going to do? No. But if you ask me about the risks, well, to me, the risk I want to take into account is that all that stuff is not going to end too well. And so I can afford to own gold, and I'm glad I own the gold.
All right. Axel, we'll wrap it up there. It's always great chatting with you. I really do appreciate the way that you view these markets, not taking really any biases into this, just trying to get a feeling and understanding of what is happening in the world. And boy, oh boy, right now there is a lot of moving currents. And just this week, it's going to be interesting to see even where the markets close this week. Axel, thanks as always for your time. Great chatting with you. We'll have you back on in another month or so. Have a great rest of your week.
My pleasure.